History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media. MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein.
And I'm Michael Isikoff.
And this is another edition of the Spy Talk podcast. Thanks for joining us. Wow, another crazy week. I think I've written chaos into headlines about the intelligence community about three times in the last couple of months.
That sounds low to me. I'd go higher. I think you've done it more than that. We're gonna start keeping count here.
We gotta
chaos
come up with,
and crazy seems to be the consistent themes for Spy Talk.
We gotta come up with new words. I mean, yeah. Our subject this week isn't even Tulsi Gabbard and the craziness going on at over at the National Intelligence Director and her wacky stuff, trying to keep in the good graces of Trump by out MAGA, the MAGA types in the administration. Crazy stuff going on at the FBI under Cash Patel and Bongino, and all this crazy stuff about Epstein, which
Jeffrey Epstein,
including, you know, that he was an Israeli intelligence agent. Well, you know, got lots of stuff going on. But for the purposes of this week, where the main subject is the critical report that Trump's CIA director, John Ratcliffe, put out knocking the CIA report from the Biden era, from the Obama era.
Not just a critical report, but a criminal referral to the Justice Department to investigate John Brennan, Obama's CIA director, and James Comey, who was the FBI director at the time. We're going to get into all that with Sue Miller, who has quite a few interesting things to say on this subject.
Sue Miller was the principal author of the CIA's report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. And she is with us today, and not only was she the principal author of that, she was a two times or more station chief. She was the head of CIA counterintelligence. She stood up the CIA's new China Mission Center. Heavy hitter, in other words, and she is our guest today. But before we get to Sue, Mike, one other thing, a bugaboo, another crazy report about CIA involvement in the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. All right. Look, this is, you know, we live in an age of conspiracy obsessions. You know, the Jeffrey Epstein story is a conspiracy mongering at the highest levels. And,
conspiracy. I mean, we got him everywhere.
But look, the mother of all conspiracy theories is the Kennedy assassination. In fact, you know, somebody did a study some years ago and said that the conspiracy theory as a thing, as a reference in the political dialogue of the country, only begins with the Kennedy assassination and the aftermath when people like Mark Lane and other people were spreading all sorts of conspiracy theories to undermine the Warren Commission. This has gone on for decades now. And those of us who have reviewed the evidence over the years don't think there is much to be or anything to be learned at this point.
I have to say. Yeah, I got a funny bone in me that wants the CIA to be involved in the Kennedy assassination. Oh, I'd love that from a journalistic perspective.
Sure.
But it never comes true, unfortunately. No. And this week, we're not going to get into the weeds on it right now. But another report came out tying Oswald to the CIA. Right. And you wrote a report, you and another Spy Talk contributing author with expertise in this area, Gus Russo. You guys wrote a report. yesterday, which I invite everyone to go to the Spy Talk site and read, that just tears that thing apart and says it's BS. And we wouldn't even be paying that much attention, except the Washington Post wrote it up and put it on the front page.
I was absolutely astonished. I couldn't believe that the Post wrote the story in the first place, because if you read our Spy Talk analysis, there's absolutely nothing there.
Nothing there.
Nothing.
Big ball
there.
Of nothingness.
Right. But not only did they do the story, they put it on the friggin' front page of the paper, is suggesting that these raise further questions about whether the CIA was involved in a plot to kill Kennedy. Now, look, we know the CIA did all sorts of nasty stuff during this period. They were trying to assassinate a foreign leader, Fidel Castro. They were doing everything they could to overthrow
him. And they were involved in illegal domestic operations, which is another more fuel for the conspiracy.
Of course. But the specifics here, you know, most of which has been promoted by a former Spy Talk contributor, Jeff Morley, somebody I've been friendly with for years, Washington Post reporter, really nice guy.
Love him.
Diligent, but is completely off the rails on this subject. And, you know, keeps suggesting that these new documents released show an operational relationship between the CIA and Lee Harvey Oswald, that Oswald was under constant surveillance and monitoring. This is endorsed by in the front page of the Washington Post by the CIA. They were monitoring. All garbage. There's nothing that supports that. If you go through the elements of it, it's all explainable in completely reasonable ways. The one thing that Morley and the Post seized on was these new documents about George Joannides, who ran the Miami station that was funding anti-Castro Cubans in the early 1960s, and then later was the liaison with the House Assassinations Committee, and didn't disclose his earlier role to the Assassinations Committee. And that was wrong. It was a conflict, as we pointed out. He should have done so. And, you know, it was a lapse in judgment by the CIA. But what the Post story and more.
Well, I have to interrupt and say, yeah, it wasn't just the Post. In fact, the first person to take a swipe at this was Axios.
Right.
Then the Post putting it on the front page legitimized all the broadcast networks or cable networks. They all went crazy on. Everyone wrote this up without questioning the internal data, as you guys did yesterday. I urge people to go read. We're not going to get into all the weeds here, but essentially, through osmosis, Jeff Morley, who was the intellectual author of all this reporting, connects the CIA to Oswald personally, and that Oswald proclaimed before he was shot he was a patsy for somebody. Anyway, we love conspiracies, but come on.
And just to button all this, look, the Joannides documents are supposedly his personnel file is what's driving this. There's nothing in those documents that connects Joannides to Oswald at all. There's no mention of Oswald. There's no indication that Joannides had anything to do with Oswald, that he knew about Oswald until the assassination. Yet the fact that he didn't disclose his role in funding the anti-Castro Cubans, some of whom who did have, you know, connections, not connections, but had a scuffle with
okay,
Oswald
my head
in
hurts.
New Orleans. All right. Enough.
All right.
The point is, read our piece. Read our piece.
Do read it. Unless you, of course, you just want to keep believing in conspiracy because it's like a lollipop, you know.
Right.
Lots of empty calories there. But today's subject is Sue Miller, who we interviewed earlier today, and she has got. She makes news, folks. She talks. She gives a stout defense of, naturally, of her team's report on Russian interference in the 2000 election. But she goes beyond that to discuss in detail the FBI's insistence of including the so-called Steele dossier in the final report, on the election interference, and many lots of inside scuttlebutt about what went on in the writing and production of that report. And I guarantee you that you have any interest in the subject, you're going to really like listening to Sue Miller and what she has to say. So without further ado,
let's get on with it.
Sue Miller, it's a great pleasure to have you back on the Spy Talk podcast, and you're becoming part of our Spy Talk family. Anyway,
is that good or bad?
Well, we'll see. No, I think
good it's good for us.
It's right? Great for us. Bad for the world. Great for journalism. Yeah. Anyway, so the subject today, of course, is the Republican knock, or the Trump administration intelligence agency knock on your report on Russian interference in the election, which was an all source report. So it knocks your work as, and I'm going to call it your work, but of course there were many hands involved. It essentially says it was a sloppy, rushed job and leapt to conclusions that weren't justified by the intelligence. What do you say?
I say that is not true.
Okay, that's a good start.
To be absolutely blunt, there's no other way to put it. It is absolutely not true. We had a process. We had multiple people on the team. I was not alone. We got people from all flavors of CIA officer. We got reports officers, meaning collection management officers nowadays, and CI people and analysts and things like that were all on our team. Mm-hmm. And all of us went in with a completely open mind. Mm. If it turned out that there was nothing to see here, we would absolutely have said it, because that's what you do in counterintelligence. You just tell the truth of what you find.
Yeah. And actually, when you drill down into this report put out by Ratcliffe at CIA, it picks all these nits, you might say. But and the bottom line was, it was a pretty good report, but they got the headlines out of it that they wanted.
Meaning they, the current
to discredit the Biden era intelligence community's assessment of Russian interference in the election.
Well, this was the Obama era.
I'm sorry, Obama administration.
Last days of the Obama administration.
Right,
it was
thank
the
you.
Last days of the Obama administration. It was in 2016 when we 2017, I guess, is when was Trump first elected? It was
2016.
November. So it was 2015, 2016 that we were working on this, and because we'd found some really good intelligence. And I don't found some. We just happened upon it. I mean, the way it is when you're at headquarters, you get information in. And some analysts and some operations people came to me when I was head of counterintelligence at the time and said, we need to look at this. And we did take a look at it.
And it wasn't like it was a secret, you know, contacts between the Trump campaign and various Russian individuals or Russian connected individuals.
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't so much about his contact with them. What the information that we had coming in was simply that all it said, and there was multiple pieces, so I won't go into all of it, but the bottom line is all it said was, the Russians were trying to influence the election in favor of Trump in 2015, 2016, when he was running. And that's all it said. And that was, and we were able to verify that 100% that that happened. And that's what we said in our report.
So if I could just break in here a little, at the time, you said you were head of counterintelligence. So when did this information first come in? Because the intelligence assessment that is the subject of this CIA report, Tradecraft report, doesn't begin until the latter days of the Obama administration. December, I think, is when the president directed this. So when did you first get this intelligence as head of counterintelligence about the Russians seeking to influence the election in Trump's favor?
It would have been, I can't remember exact dates or anything, but it would have been probably in the December timeframe. And what
December
happens,
16. So, just as this assessment is, you've been, and just to be clear.
Yeah, 16 or you know,
no,
even
16.
November. Yeah, 16, I'm saying. But even November or maybe even earlier. The thing is what happens with these reports is we just put them out and let people look at them. And so it was definitely in December-ish that, or November and December, I would say, is where we were working on it and trying to look into what we could find. And, our director left us alone. He wanted it to be completely, without any kind of influence. And yet, you know, at the same time, you know, this was based on some information that was had come in that had been read by other people. And so we were getting a little bit of, you know, it's why we set up this task force to kind of look into this, honestly.
And Brennan tapped you to oversee the task force, to author the report. What was your precise role in the drafting?
I headed up the report team, and I intentionally got people, some that I knew well and some that I did not know well, but I wanted people that would speak truth to power. And would, you know, if we were seeing something wrong, I wanted the people to be able to come back and tell me and a couple of other senior people on the team that we were wrong, you know. And so we really wanted people who would speak their minds and really delve into the information. And so that's how we got the team together.
So look, let me just read a couple of excerpts from this CIA report and get your reaction. The review identified multiple procedural anomalies in the preparation of the intelligence assessment. These included a highly compressed production timeline, stringent compartmentation, and excessive involvement of agency heads, all of which led to departures from standard practices in the drafting, coordination, and reviewing of the intelligence assessment. So start with that first one, highly compressed timeline, because the directive was to get this out quickly before Donald Trump took office while Barack Obama was still the president. Is that a legitimate critique that you were rushed to get this out very quickly?
No, I don't. I don't remember it at all that way. We came across the information, I want to say, in the fall-ish time. It might have been, but we put the team together to take a look at it. I want to say it was even before his election we were looking at it.
And well, I was going to ask if there was a sense of alarm about Russian interference in the election and that pushed you. But it wouldn't make sense that, you know, I mean, you did this report after the election. So what was the atmosphere in the preparation of this report?
So here's the deal is I was not a decision maker in this. This would have been Gina and other people at a higher level than me. All we had done was put forth the information that we were getting in and let people read it. And then at some point we were asked to, we really want you to drill down on this and take a hard look at it, meaning all source, get a bunch of different types of people on your team and all the rest of that to take a look at this and see what we see. And believe me, there already, you know, some of the intel had gone out in very restricted, you know, restricted avenues. And we're already getting people to say, oh, nothing to see here. And others that are saying he shouldn't be president. And we're like, we're not going to listen to either side. We're just going to let the data take us where it is. And that's what we did.
You mentioned that you got this intelligence in before you began the process, saying that Putin was doing this in order to help Donald Trump. And the final language you use is that Putin aspired, I think, was the verb that was used to make that conclusion. And the review does challenge whether that reporting was as solid and as justified as was presented. You ultimately said high confidence, but the NSA director, Mike Rogers, lowered his agency's confidence a bit on that, saying moderate confidence. So was this single source reporting? What can you tell us about how solid the particular judgment that Putin was trying to help Donald Trump, as opposed to just sort of create chaos in the American political culture?
Yeah, in fairness, it wasn't the information that we saw simply showed that the Russians were trying to influence the election in Trump's favor. We weren't really sure how that was working. They had a plan, they had a this, they had a that, and a couple of other, you know, but we basically said they absolutely tried, and unless we poll every voter, we can't tell you if it worked. Because we don't know why people voted for him or why they didn't. And so that's where we left it. And we did have people on both sides of the aisle wanting, you know, something very firm in their side or firm in the other side. And we were ready to do that. The way CIA, especially counterintelligence, works, you let the data take you to the right conclusions. And sometimes those conclusions are exceptionally clear, and sometimes they're not.
But if I hear you correctly, Sue, you're saying that the intelligence was solid, that Russia was trying to do this, but the language in the assessment was Putin himself aspired to help Trump. I didn't hear you say you had direct intelligence of a directive from Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Help elect Donald Trump.
That was asked by us too. Do you think Putin knew about it? I'm like, it's a dictatorship. He had to know about it.
It was an analytic judgment as opposed to direct intelligence
I can't remember if it was direct or analytic, but the bottom line is 100% Putin was behind it. Because if Russia's trying to influence President, you know, the election, it's not going to be some GS-13 in the Ministry of Interior that's decided to do that. It has to go from the very tippy top, just like it would be for us if we were doing it somewhere else.
At the time, and subsequently, in my talks with intelligence officials, ex-intelligence officials, intelligence experts, Putin's goal was to create chaos in American politics, that if they could create chaos by aspiring to get Trump elected, fine. But the main goal was just to create chaos in U.S. elections, by the way, which they've been trying to do for decades. And this was probably the most successful by far effort on the Russians' part. What do you say to that?
I guess that could be a Russian. Absolutely, it could be a Russian goal. But that's not what we were focused on. We were focused, were they trying to influence the elections towards Trump?
And subsequently, has anything happened to change your mind about that?
About whether they were trying to create chaos?
No, about trying to elect Trump.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I think they definitely wanted him. And is that unusual? No. When you look at elections around the world, either in our allies among our allies in NATO or among semi-enemies or maybe enemies or you know, adversarial groups like China and everything else, we pay a lot of attention to the elections. And we even if they are not even and what happens in their government, and even if we understand that as dictatorships, there's not really any real elections, right? But we all pay attention to each other's who's going to replace Yeltsin? You know, who's going to replace so and so? How's that going to help or hurt America? You know, we that's normal stuff.
So, Sue, so this was, you know, it's hard to remember, but this was 9 years ago we're talking. Mm-hmm. And this CIA note comes out just a couple of weeks ago. Did you know it was coming? Were you interviewed?
And no.
Not at all. You had,
not at all.
You had no heads up that, hey.
No, and I asked a couple of members of my team if they had a heads up, and they didn't either.
And did they interview you?
No.
What was your reaction when you saw it?
Well, I got together with other members of my team and we were all rolling our eyes because none of it was true.
What part of it was not true?
Yeah. What specifically was not true?
Well, if I remember exactly what it said, I can't tell you. I don't have it in front of me right now. But the bottom line is there was no coercion. There was no requirement that we come to a single solution. Every single one of my team members, including me, would have quit if somebody had said, we want you to come out with this. And nobody did. In fact, they were a little bit angry when we came out with what we did, because they were hoping we'd be able to say, you know, not they, not all of they. There were some people that were really hoping we were able to say, and therefore Trump is not, you know, the president. And other people wanted us to say, nothing to see here. And it was in between that.
Well, were these senior people at the CIA who wanted you to say Trump is an illegitimate president because the election was tainted by this Russian interference? Were there senior people saying that to you?
Well, let's say put a name on this. This report says Brennan essentially put his thumb on the scale.
He did not. We never even consulted with Brennan until we actually gave him the final version. He did not consult with us. We intentionally we were in a room by ourselves for a lot of the time. I mean, we would go and, you know, get lunch and things like that. But we had this, we're not telling anybody what's going on. We're going to figure this out alone. And we're not, and we did tell Brennan what we found. And that was exactly what I said. The Russians tried to influence. We can't tell you that this election is somehow has to be done over because we can't tell you how many people were influenced by this. And people wanted us to say that. And then we had others
who wanted you to say that, Sue?
The Democratic side, you know, anybody who was not...
But I'm talking about the CIA. Who in the CIA wanted you to say that?
Oh, I can't remember. There were people that... I'm not going to go into that. But basically, there were people that were like, not on my team, we just decided to be straightforward. But there were some that were like, you know, yes, there's something to see here. And there's others that are saying, nothing to see here. And
some
I never
left
asked them why they
right.
why they wanted to hear that or you know see that. I just assumed that one was from one party and one was from another, and I didn't really care because we decided to be absolutely
non-part.
Alone in our process.
Let me ask you. Let me circle back to Brennan again for a second. So. You would say that this congressional investigation, quote unquote, of Brennan is unjustified.
Absolutely. I literally, after this, you know, after I saw this, I was writing to some of my people. I said, I don't remember Brennan even you know, calling us in or anything in any kind of a weird way. One of my officers thought that we might have done sort of an update because everybody was hoping we'd be done like in a week, you know, and it took a little bit longer than that for us to kind of get through all of the data and try to figure all of this out. And so it could have been that we were, how's it going? And we would have said, we're still working on it. We're still sifting through. We're still finding if we've missed any information, et cetera.
And the bottom line with Brennan, just to clarify, the idea that he committed perjury of some sort.
No.
Well, let's get to that because that's the most controversial part of
and
this.
And the Steele dossier. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not a congressional investigation at this point. John Radcliffe, the CIA director, has referred it to the Justice Department for a criminal investigation. And it relates specifically to the controversy and debate about the Steele dossier. And I did learn new information, if this report is correct, about that, starting with just how hard the FBI, according to this report, was pressing to include the Steele dossier in the documents. What they say here is, in this report, the intelligence assessment authors, that's you, first learned of the dossier and FBI's leadership's insistence on its inclusion on the 20th of December, the same day the largely coordinated draft was entering the review process at CIA.
That's right.
FBI leadership made it clear that their participation in the assessment hinged on the dossier's inclusion. And over the next few days, repeatedly pushed to weave references to it throughout the main body of the intelligence assessment.
That's true.
That's the FBI, extraordinary. They're saying you include this or we're out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Who said that?
It wasn't to me. I think it was between Brennan and the FBI director. It must have been. Yeah.
And Comey. Comey was telling that to Brennan.
Yeah. It was this last minute thing. We had looked at the Steele dossier and the problem with it, it might be true. I don't know. But the bottom line
I should say nothing in it, other than what was already out there, has ever been verified after years of investigation by Mueller and others.
But, right. Yeah, but exactly. But
so
the thing
is it responsible at this point to say it might be true when no evidence has come forward that actually supports any of it?
I would say that as of this point, we don't have any new information. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Okay.
And the Steele dossier did come out. And they insisted that it be attached to the report. And those of us that were on the team were like, absolutely not. Because it's not that
Well, I want to ask you specifically.
True. We had not looked at it. We hadn't looked at it. This came in very late. And we hadn't looked at it. We hadn't thought about it. We had, I shouldn't say we hadn't looked at it. There were some people that looked to see if there was anything that we had like in our own files that could corroborate it. We had nothing at the time.
So Steele didn't come to you through some back channel. After all, he was a former senior MI6 officer. In other words, the agency that you collaborate with very closely. So he didn't come to you. I mean, he was walking this report around town, showing it to just about everyone, but he didn't knock on your door in Langley and say, you guys ought to have this.
He might. I don't remember him coming to Langley saying you have to have this. I remember the FBI telling us, have you seen the Steele dossier? And we think that's appropriate to go into, you know, we think that should be included.
What was their argument?
I think they believed that the Steele dossier, let me back up. I asked them if they had any corroborating information regarding the Steele dossier at the same time. And, when we talked to them and they said they did not, but they felt that it was from good sources that probably knew what they were talking about. And I said, it's really hard, to change the paper right now And B, if we are going to use that dossier, we need to put this down and probably spend another year seeing if it's any of it's true.
So what strikes me about this this Steele dossier question is that you were putting out a finished intelligence report.
Yes.
Can we call it that? Finished intelligence report, just not reports, do not include some random bit of rogue intelligence, raw intelligence just put out there.
I'm not saying it was rogue. It was that it came out to us. They came to us like literally as the report was about to go out and say, we're not putting our name on this report like FBI unless you attach it. Because and we said we have no absolutely done. It was so late in the game. We have not looked into this at all. And we can't tell you with high confidence, medium confidence, low confidence, is this true? And at that time, we couldn't do that.
Do you think Comey was motivated to smear Trump by including this report in your report?
I don't know Comey well
enough.
What
did you think when you heard about this?
No, I don't think it was so much that he wanted to smear Trump. I think it was more that he had a belief that it might be true, that he felt that it could very well be true. And frankly, it could be. We never looked into it because that's not our job. You know, that's the FBI's job.
Why isn't the CIA's job to analyze a report from an MI6 office, former MI6 officer, about Russians' dalliance with Trump?
We can absolutely analyze that part of it. But with regard to the American type stuff, you know, was it sent for a reason? Was it this? Was it that? That is something that we could get part of from our own sources. But that's really from the, again, it was thrust on us so late that we were not able to look at it. We had looked at it before. We had said there is just not enough time to look at this. And they wanted it. And we said, and they said they would not sign off on the paper unless we included it.
What was your reaction when you heard that?
I was pissed.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is being communicated to you by Brennan after talking to Comey, or was it communicated to you directly?
I think it was with one of my FBI colleagues that I was working with over there, that, you know, kind of a mid-level guy who wasn't making the decisions. You know, hey, right, the FBI has taken a look at this and they don't want to sign off on this unless you put this at the end of the, you know, as an addendum. And so that's what we did. And I think we had some sort of a covering paragraph saying, you know, this has been included at the FBI's request. This information has not been looked at by this particular team or something to that effect.
Let me read you a couple of other comments that they make in this report about this dispute. The CIA's deputy director for analysis warned in an email to Brennan on 29 December that including it, the Steele dossier, in any form risked, quote, the credibility of the entire paper. But then it goes on to say this.
The first part's true.
Okay. Despite these objections, Brennan showed a preference for narrative consistency over analytic soundness. When confronted with specific flaws in the dossier by the two mission center leaders, one with extensive operational experience and the other with a strong analytic background, you could have been either one of those, he appeared more swayed by the dossier's general conformity with existing theories than by legitimate tradecraft concerns. Brennan ultimately formalized his position in writing, stating that, quote, my bottom line is that I believe that the information warrants inclusion in the report.
That's probably true.
If you translate all that gobbledygook, it seems to be, I got to get along with this guy and the FBI, So, you know, let's just go ahead and do it. Because, first of all, Comey's holding this over our head. He's not going to join. He's going to destroy this process by withholding his approval. So essentially blackmailing you, blackmailing CIA into including this unverified intelligence, which, by the way, Bob Woodward called garbage within days after it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So would you agree with that assessment? Essentially, the FBI was blackmailing Brennan into including the Steele dossier?
Blackmailing is sort of a strong word, but they were definitely using coercion, yeah. And, you know, saying that I want to have this in as an addendum. And if I remember correctly, it was put in and we put a cover over it saying this was put in as an addendum at the last, we didn't say last minute. It was more, analytic speak, but basically it said, you know, this has been put in for readers to review, but, you know, this was not something that was, that we could find any evidence of having been truthful.
My reaction is
or
just,
real. Maybe it was real. I'm just going to say, maybe it was real. I have no idea. But the bottom line is we couldn't figure it out at the time.
Is it painful for you to review all this, Sue?
No, not really. I'm proud of the work we did, to be honest. I thought we did a great job. I thought we had the right team together. We're still all terrific friends. We weren't friends before. We knew each other. But, you know, we bonded a little bit because of the legal things that happened to us afterwards. But the bottom line is the report was done. I let them do the report. I wasn't even asking them for one way or the other. I just told these guys, come up with what we think the truth is. And again, in intelligence, often you won't ever know the real truth. But what we think it is based on all of everything that we have, did they try to influence it? And if they did, does it mean, you know, the election, you know, do we have any evidence that is so bad that the election should be, I wouldn't say we even thought it should be redone or something like that. And the bottom line at the time, we didn't have anything. We had what we had. The Russians were trying to influence the election in Trump's favor. And I don't know why he even really cared about it, because I would say, the bottom line is that's all it said. Yeah.
And we'll never know the degree to which it was influential or effective.
Yeah. That's exactly what it said.
If this story has any legs at all, it's because of this criminal referral that John Radcliffe has sent to the Justice Department. And frankly, it will revolve specifically about what I just read earlier about what Brennan wrote, that his bottom line is he wanted it included. The information warrants inclusion in the report because, as you know, he subsequently testified before Congress in public and said the Steele dossier had no influence whatsoever on the CIA. But here he is in writing saying, yes, I wanted this included. There does seem to be a contradiction there. Now, for criminal justice purposes, his testimony in 2017 is outside the statute of limitations, unless they somehow try to bring some sort of conspiracy case. We'll see. I don't see, based on any of this, how they get there.
Yeah.
But there is that contradiction between what he is quoted as saying in writing here and what he testified to publicly.
Yeah. I never, and my team, we would have walked away if Brennan had been telling us, I want you to find something in Trump's favor or against Trump. We would have absolutely all walked away. I would never be a part of that, nor would my team. And so
away when he directed you to include it in the report.
So when he told us he wants to add it as an addendum, and we noted to him that we had not had any chance to look at it. And plus, anyway, it would be more like an FBI thing to look at. You know, FBI would need to look at that a lot closer. We'll put it in as an addendum, but the key is that we are not going to use that piece as any part of our analysis because we can't. We have information that we can believe for what we've already written, in other words. But we did not have any corroboration of the Steele documentation at that time.
And just so I'm clear on this, CIA counterintelligence, counterespionage did not analyze the allegations in the Steele dossier.
Oh, no, they took a hard look at it and looked for any kind of corroborating information. We didn't have any.
Did you know it had been commissioned by the Clinton campaign?
The Steele dossier?
Well,
paid for by the Clinton campaign.
No,
and the
I don't think I knew
National
that
Committee.
At that time. I mean, I the Steele dossier was like, if my entire
attention span
was this big, the Steele dossier was as big as my fingernail as far as a thing that I pondered over during that time. Mm-hmm. So,
much better direct sources of information than the Steele dossier set of
rumors. It came so late, and that was where it ended. And could it be real? Maybe. Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
Do you feel this report by the CIA, commissioned by Radcliffe, was a political hit job?
Oh, the Radcliffe thing? Yes, 100%.
100% what?
100%. It's he's doing Trump's bid to go after those of us who dared to write a report that simply said the Russians tried to influence the election towards Trump. We can't tell you if it worked, and therefore Trump is our president, is what it said. And that's a crime.
Well, we have to leave it. It's not.
I don't believe we think so. But,
we don't see a crime there.
Yeah,
we see a fierce, intelligence battle. These kinds of battles go on all the time, as you would be the first to say. I mean, it's daily life.
We shout a lot at each other in the building.
Yeah, analysts are hired to argue, you know, their points.
Well, so are ops officers. I mean, we all argue with each other, and then we all get drinks together. I mean, because we...
You get intelligence, and you say, what does this mean?
So look, Sue, given that Trump has now turned on Putin and is giving these new weapons to Ukraine
today
to fight...
Today he has turned on Putin.
He has. Do you think Putin is still... pleased that he weighed in to help Trump in the first place?
I would have to give me another 2 months to figure this out. Because I want to see, does the help for Ukraine keep going? Did he just do it for like a 2 week period just to get people
like
off his back?
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And so I would have to see how that goes.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Sue. We have to wrap it up now, but we really appreciate your candor and your self-defense of your team and your report. And this is a great show for Spy Talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't done so already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. I should add law enforcement as well these days, given all the border stuff going on. Just Google Spy Talk anyway, and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. And that's it for now. See you next week. I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
See you around.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.